Thank you for the introduction. So today I will be presenting to you our work on managing tail latency in data center scale file systems under production constraints. This is joint work with people from Duke University, the University of Sydney, EPFL, and Microsoft Research. So first of all, tail latency of distributed file systems. Is it a problem? In order to show you that it is, we perform an experiment to characterize the latency. We periodically run a distributed copy of 200 gigabytes over HDFS in a data center with 4,000 servers over 2 weeks. These are the results of that experiment. On the first graph, you have on the y-axis the hour of the day in which every experiment was run, and then on the y-axis, you have the job runtime. The graph on the other side is just a CDF of all the points in the graph so that you can appreciate the tail latency in an easier manner. So as you can see, there is a high degree of variation, and there is no particular pattern. Jobs that are run at the beginning of the day aren't larger than the ones that are run in the end of the day. It is important to mention that solutions such as speculative execution to cut tail latency are already in place, and the problem is still present. We also have other solutions to manage a better replica selection for reads and writes, and still tail latency is present. This is the case because in production environments, we face a set of challenges. For example, massive scale. We have data centers that range from a few thousands of nodes to tens of thousands of nodes. There is a static heterogeneity from different servers generations on the same data center. We have dynamic heterogeneity, because today data centers are multi-tenant or resource harvesting environments in which latency critical services are co-located with batch workloads, and then performance isolation mechanisms manage the shared resources. And things also need to be easy to deploy and maintain. Thousands of lines of code cannot be deployed at once. You need to convince the production team to really use your solution. In this work, we focus on the tail latency of the distributed systems of the batch workloads in multi-tenant or resource harvesting environments. For the rest of the talk, I will first talk about the performance characterization, then I'll talk about our solution, our implementation, the evaluation, and some conclusions. So first, let's talk about the performance variability characterization. Based on the first experiment that I mentioned, the distributed copy of 200 gigabytes over a period of 2 weeks, we traced this experiment and we analyzed terabytes of data of information. We classified operation in metadata operations and block access operations. Based on this, we got the numbers that you see on the graph. On the x-axis, you have the time that it takes for each of these operations, and on the y-axis, you have the CDF. As you can see, metadata operations are completely offsetted when compared to block read and write accesses. The tail of the metadata operations are very close to the best case of block read and write accesses. From this data, it is clear that in our data centers, data read and write accesses cause most of the variation. And regardless of the source of this variation, it is important to react. In order to do so, we devised a solution whose goal is to reduce tail latency for read and write operations. We make decision based on client-side information. First, we track the latency. Then we check for slowness. Next, we decide whether to act or not. This means to replace or not a slow server. And then we decide to take the action, in this case, replacement. First, I'll talk about our solution for writes. Our solution for writes is called fail fast. The systems that we study and for which our solutions are applicable work with a data write pipeline style. In these situations, the client wants to write a file. The file is divided into small packets, and then these packets are sent to the first client, then to the next client, until it reaches the final one. After this happens, an ACK is sent to the client. Based on this, the slowest server in this data write pipeline is the bottleneck. We want to be able to dynamically identify and replace this slow server. And we want to replace it by leveraging existing replication and fault tolerance mechanisms already present in distributed file systems. Hence the name fail fast. I'll walk you through an example. So first, let's go over the track phase. On the y-axis, you have three different replicas and a client. And on the x-axis, you have the time. This is an schematic and a representative. So be aware of the time scale. The client, in this case, wants to write a file. And the file is, again, divided into small packets. It's sent to the first replica, then to the next one, and then to the third one. In this particular case, things seem to be going fine. Once this is done, the client is able to track the latencies. The second packet is sent, and things are, again, as they should be. Things are OK. Every packet seems to be pretty much the same duration. Then for the third packet, replica number two starts becoming a bottleneck. Packets are taking longer. It happened once more. And now the client has enough information to actually compare and check the latencies of the fast server and the slow server. In this case, the fast replica is the yellow replica, and the slow replica is the purple replica. As we can see in this example, the purple replica has larger latencies than the yellow replica. So we need to decide, is it worth it to replace replica number two or not? In order to do so, we devised a cost function that takes into account, first, the cost of no replacement. In this case, it would be the time it takes to write to send the remaining packets. Let's say that in this particular example, we have two remaining packets, versus the cost of replacement, which involves copy the first four packets that have already been sent, plus the time it would take to write the remaining packets. In this case, the remaining packet is an average of the time it took to write each packet from the remaining replicas in the pipeline. In this particular example, the replacement cost is smaller than the no replacement cost, so we move to replace. Now, in the action phase, where the actual replacement happens, the client wants to remove replica 2 from the pipeline, and in order to do so, it decides to treat it as a faulty node. So it contacts its metadata manager, and it asks for a replacement. This causes a disconnection in the pipeline. The metadata manager then communicates what is the new replica to be added into that particular pipeline. A rebuild process starts in which the four previous packets are copied. And then we move to connect and to continue the same process all over and over for the remaining packets. So as a summary, our solution for fail-fast dynamically identifies and replaces the slowest server in the pipeline. It uses a cost function to determine replacement, and it leverages existing fault-tolerant and replication mechanisms already present in distributed file systems. Now I'll talk about reads. In contrast to writes, reads have been largely explored in distributed file systems. A common solution for this is static hedging for reads. In this approach, all the copies of the particular data are also leveraged, just as the writes. In this case, if a read from a particular replica starts taking longer than a specified latency, a static threshold, then you move to switch and start reading from a new replica. The issue here is how to choose the threshold. If it is a threshold that's too high, then it might not kick in, and it will lead to high latencies. If it is a too low threshold, then hedging will occur more often than the desired expectation. So this will lead to high load and can overload the system. We have observed both cases in production environments. In order to address this problem, our solution is called smart hedging. And we dynamically compute the hedging threshold based on previous latencies. And we also reduce the load via exponential backoff mechanisms. So I'll walk you through an example of this as well. So initially, we provide a static threshold, just as the case of static hedging, because there is not enough data to compute a dynamic threshold yet on the client side. So the way it works is the client starts reading a packet from a replica, and this packet takes lesser time than the threshold. So everything is OK. The client continues reading, and the packet is, again, smaller than the threshold in reading time. And this happens until enough packets have been tracked for the client to start computing a dynamic threshold based on previous experiences. So then this static threshold is replaced by a dynamic threshold. Again, we start reading, but now this read is taking longer than the dynamic threshold. It's taking longer than the previous reads that we have observed. So the client needs to make a decision and start reading from a new replica to see if this replica will be better than the previous one. In this particular case, the second replica represented with the green packet finishes earlier than the blue, than the first replica represented by the blue packet. So in this case, the client moves to replace the first replica and continues reading from the second replica with a new dynamic threshold based on this computation. And this continues all over and over until the read is finally finished. So I have presented you solutions for both reads and writes. Our solutions are production compliant, and these are the main three goals that we wanted to fulfill with them. So first, we aim to make local decisions so that there are no centralized components. Our data centers consist of tens of thousands of servers, so we didn't want to have a centralized database, for example, to track the latencies across the whole data center, because this would then incur in communication overheads and storage overheads. Instead, we move to make everything local client-side information. We also adapt to dynamic changes. So we don't have any system assumption on hardware heterogeneity in the data center, for example. We only track recent requests in order to manage this on the client side. And our solution is also easy to deploy and integrate. There are no invasive changes. It's very easy to test and for clients, real users, to switch between them. This is because all of our code changes are in the client side, so our solution works as a drop-in replacement. For the implementation, we build our solution on top of HDFS, which is the standard distributed file system for big data analytic frameworks. Our solution is called Curtle HDFS. We implement both fail-fast writes and smart hedging in Curtle HDFS. We keep track of recent history on the client side. This allows us to enable our techniques independently, and it is also easy to adopt because it is just a drop-in replacement for the client-side library in HDFS. Most of our tracking mechanisms and read and write techniques are open sourced in the HDFS repository. For the evaluation, we observed both synthetic workloads and production deployments. So for the synthetic workloads, we tested in 4,000 servers with synthetic workloads that were mostly I/O intensive. So the synthetic workloads consist of distributed copies and reads from disk to memory and writes from memory to disk with background load that we observed from production. So we simulate the production background load. We evaluate our HDFS clients, both the production client and the Curtle HDFS client independently. For large-scale production deployments, we tested on three data centers with a total of 70,000 servers for a monthly duration with production workloads. In this case, we evaluate our HDFS clients simultaneously, both the production HDFS and Curtle HDFS at the same time in the same data center. To do so, we relied on A/B testing. So now I'll present a bit more about the synthetic workloads. So on this graph, you'll see it's very similar to the graph you saw in the beginning with the distributed copy of the 200 gigabytes. It is actually the exact same graph. On the x-axis, you have the job runtime duration, and on the y-axis, you have the CDF. So this is how the regular HDFS production client works in the testbed. Now, this is the exact same experiment performed again over 2 weeks periodically, but with our solution, Curtle HDFS, with a green line. And as you can see, Curtle HDFS cuts tail latencies when compared to production HDFS. This tells us that cutting tail latency at the storage level also cuts tail latency and has impact in the job duration level. Now let's break it up into reads and writes to see the benefits of each of our techniques. So these are the synthetic workload results for fail-fast. Again, on purple, you have the production HDFS, and then on green, you have the fail-fast. In this case, we are comparing the 99th percent latency. So as you can see here, we achieve reduction in the 99th percent tail latency of 2.x approximately, but the reduction of the other part of the tail is also considerable. Now for reads, we compared production HDFS baseline. We compared static hedging with a low threshold of 100 milliseconds, and we compared smart hedging with the dynamic threshold. As you can see, both static and smart hedging cut the tail latency when compared to production HDFS. And the latency between the static and smart hedging is not that different. That's mainly because the static hedging has a very low threshold. Now, on the other graph, you see the number of hedges, so the number of times the client tried to switch to read from a new replica. Here is where smart hedging makes a difference. When compared to the total amount of hedges produced by static hedging, we can see that the load is considerably reduced and tail latencies are maintained. So this now, after we got these results, the production team was excited or somehow let us try our solutions in their data centers. So these are the results for that, for production workloads for Fail-Fast. This is a zoom of the 99.9th percentile, the one of the worst cases, because our solution shines when there is overload in production. So as you can see, in that case, we cut tail latencies by 1.8%, 1.8x in the particularly worst case. Now, for the reads, the goal here was different because static hedging already cut the tail latencies. We wanted to maintain those latencies or to improve them and to hedge whenever is necessary. Please note that in this graph, the static hedging is 500 milliseconds rather than 100 milliseconds as we had in the testbed. This is because 100 milliseconds overloaded the production cluster. So we had to just increase the threshold to be safe. As you can see, smart hedging reduces average tail latency when compared to static hedging. We hedge more, but that's because we need to hedge in compared to a very high threshold. So in conclusion, we designed and implemented simple techniques that are production compliant and that have significant performance gains given the limited scope of changes and given the fact that they are built on top of solutions that are already meant to cut tail latency. We deployed this in production over 70,000 servers, and we also showed that it is easy to overlook important effects in non-production systems, such as the static hedging threshold. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maria. So we have time for some questions. So could you wait for the mic to reach you and state your name and affiliation, please?
Hi, Steve Hand, Google. Great talk. One thing that struck me was that you have this place where a client can sort of, you know, decide to banish a slow server. I wonder, have you thought about how you could rate limit this to sort of prevent sort of, you know, a misconfigured client or just a really picky client from just taking down your entire storage cluster?
Yeah, so we decided to make client changes because we didn't want to be to change the protocol of the servers. So I guess one way to mitigate what you're suggesting would be to limitate the number of reads and writes switches that you can have. So we actually do that with the reads. We have a backoff mechanism. So if you try to switch too many times, you might just be making things worse. So we control that over there. I didn't discuss that in the presentation, but we discuss it on the paper. For the writes, I guess, this is implemented in HDFS anyways, you cannot just keep trying to change all the times. I think there is a number, if I'm not mistaken, is 5 of times you can try to make the replacement in order that you are not punishing servers. I'm not sure if this answers your question.
No, that does. Thank you.
Okay, that's a question. There's a question in the back.
Hello, Alexander Würstlein, FAU Erlangen. My question would be similar to that one. If you have clients switching their servers and you have a limited time window over which those clients look back, then you will get oscillations in the order of that time window when clients switch to a less loaded server, overload it, and then clients switch off from that server. And that isn't mitigated by rate limiting alone. So what are you doing to limit those oscillations?
The idea with our solution is that all clients will not switch at one particular time. You will have small gradual changes that at some point will let your client converge to a fine replica and then another client converge to another one. In the case of reads, I think it's easier to control because the replicas are already written, so you don't have much choice to change, right? So even if you are trying to change, you might only have 4 or 5 choices to change. In the case of rights, this becomes a larger issue because you have a whole data center of nodes in which you might try to replace. So for the rights, again, the only solution that we have currently in place is limit the amount of replication, but there is indeed a busy flag in our servers. So if a server already seems slow from the beginning, if it has a high disk contention, we won't switch from the beginning. So that's a way in which we're trying to mitigate that from the start. We can take this discussion further if you would like. Thank you.
Yeah, Charlie Hu, Purdue University. Very nice talk. So I'm just curious, this long latency, are they the root cause? Are they due to server workload overload, or are they due to network problems? And also, one more, are they also transient, meaning in the same server, you go back later, the latency can go down?
Thank you for the question. So if I understand your question correctly, you are asking if the tail latency that we observed is due to network issues or to some other reason. And the other question is to...
Is the long latency transient, meaning same server,
yes,
you go back
okay.
later?
So the other question is to see if the behavior is transient or not. So based on our characterization, we found that in our particular data centers, the cause is this contention. But related work has suggested that in some other cases, networking failures, for example, can also be a cause of this. And regarding the transient failures, based on the profiling we did initially with the 2-week experiment, we didn't observe a transient behavior. We observed that when a server was slow, was indeed slow for a longer period of time. Thank you.
Great, thanks.